welcome to the 17th episode of the 6th season of the Ubuntu podcast. It's Wednesday, the 19th of June, and in this episode we're going to discuss what's been in the news. We'll also talk about the latest happenings in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Alan, and with me this week is Tony.
Hi, Alan.
How are you?
I'm good, yeah. You survived your boat trip?
Yes, I survived. I didn't fall in.
Good.
Other people did.
And Laura. No Daves.
Hello, Alan.
Nicely done. Seamless. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Super, super. And Mark.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right.
You've caught the sun.
Yeah, I know. It was really hard. I was chasing it for miles.
Oh, comedy gold. Let's get on with the show.
Time for some news. On change.org, there's a petition to create a native Linux Google Drive application.
What's wrong with using it through the browser?
That's what I wondered.
What does the native application do? Is there one on Windows?
Isn't it like Dropbox? It's like accessing your Google Drive, like all your stuff that's in the cloud.
Oh, I see.
That you have your Google documents and all your stuff.
Right.
Using a native client, of which there is one for Windows. Okay. And ever since Google Drive was announced, people have moaned that there isn't a Linux version. And there's been various comments from people saying, well, we'll get to it, you know, it'll come and it'll be, you know, we'll release it when it's ready and all that. And it hasn't come yet. And Drive has been around for some time now. It's like 9,000 people have signed this petition. And when 10,000 people have signed it, nothing will happen.
Because that's the way it works.
Yes, the clock will tick over to 10,000 people. Everyone will shout hooray, and then nothing at all will result.
Don't the White House have to make a statement or something?
Yes, actually, that's true. Yes, Barack Obama will demand that a small niche operating system gets a client from Google. Yes.
Well, he could be doing worse things.
Well, yes.
More on that later. Denise Dumas has given an interview about the roadmap for Red Hat Enterprise Linux.
Ooh.
And this is RHEL 7.
RHEL 7, the I think the upcoming release, which is...
That's the one that comes after 6, isn't it?
Yes.
Which is the current release.
Yes. Yeah. So that's going to have sort of an enterprise-level support around the stuff we've seen going into Fedora over the past few releases.
Oh, so all the stuff like systemd and...
I guess so.
Gnome Shell and all that
kind
of stuff.
Oh, no, not Gnome Shell.
Upstart. Mia. Oh, yes.
They're going to have classic mode as the default, which is...
Oh.
It is supposed to be familiar to Gnome 2 users, basically.
Yes.
So the idea is that people who have been using Gnome 2 on older versions of Red Hat will upgrade and they'll get classic mode, which is a bit like Gnome 2, but actually Gnome 3 without Gnome Shell.
Right. They've gone for the don't scare the horses option.
And then they can progress to modern mode if they want to.
Interesting.
To make classic people feel old-fashioned.
So the customers that pay for it get what they want, and everyone else who uses the community distro gets Gnome Shell. Is that right?
Well, I think classic mode is in Fedora. I don't think it's default.
Yeah, it is. It's not the default.
No. So you can turn it on if you want. You do get what you want in the community one. You just don't, no one does it for you.
It's probably the right decision. I don't think that people who use Red Hat want modern stuff.
What? Really? Why?
Yeah.
Surely people who use Red Hat want corporate support for their desktop.
Yes.
I mean, we're talking about a GUI here, we're talking about corporate workstations. So people are using corporate workstations and have Red Hat as their desktop OS of choice.
Don't want the latest crack.
Well, they still get all the GNOME 3, GTK 3 apps and stuff.
Oh,
well,
okay.
Of course, it's just GNOME Shell.
I'm sure, you know, they can, I nearly said apt-get install it then. Yum,
they can,
or
yum
up-to-date
install it, yes.
Or whatever it is, Red Hat Network, install GNOME Shell if they want to. In the same way that, you know, when we installed Unity 3D, people could install Unity 2D or, you know, it's no different really, is it?
I'm sure. It's exactly the same.
And I notice they're going to use XFS as the default file system.
Yes.
And okay.
Not EXT4 or not ButterFS. or anything like that.
Are there any particular advantages to XFS?
Well, it's tried and tested. You know, it's been around for a long time, and you know, it works, it's robust. And
so switching from EXT3, are they, presumably?
I don't know what RHEL 6 has, but I would imagine something like that, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
But that's for clean installs.
ButterFS is going to be supported, but it's not going to be the default option.
Oh, good.
So it's there, it's in the distro, it's just that if you're doing an install, it'll set it to XFS.
Right.
Cool. Okay, fair enough.
Interesting. In other news, a film production company called Good Morning to You Productions has filed a class action lawsuit against Warner Chappell Music over the rights to the song Happy Birthday to You. So nobody sing it.
No.
Nobody sing
it. So the reason they're called Good Morning to You Productions is because the song which the melody of Happy Birthday to You was taken from was originally a song to be sung in schools, which was Good Morning to You, which was supposed to be sung like at the beginning of the day.
So was this
the 19th century.
Was this film company, the production company, actually created specifically for the purposes of taking
Warner? They were making a film about the song Happy Birthday, and I guess they called themselves after that because that's where the history of it.
Right.
But perhaps they came across some copyright bumps in the road when Warner said, actually, we own the rights to that song, pay us lots of money.
But there is a fairly reasonable sounding argument that actually they don't.
Yes.
It's just that most of the people who have to pay up are small organisations, and it's not worth their while going to court about it.
It does make you wonder how many of these large companies who just send out cease and desists or, you know, demands for money with menace are actually riding on thin ice.
Yeah. So the idea here is basically the melody is from a different song which Warner don't own, and apparently they don't own the lyrics either, but they do own an early recording of it, and they use that to say that they still own it, even though the copyright on it was never renewed when it should have been.
Yeah, that's
so effectively
the thing.
It's now public domain under the public domain laws in America.
So when I was in the States about 10, 12 years ago, the first times I went over there, I was out with some geeks in Palo Alto, and we went to someone's birthday, and I was about to sing Happy Birthday to You, and all the geeks kind of pounced on me and were like, oh, no, don't sing that, even though it's like private residence and it's not, you know, it's not a broadcast or anything. But they actively, you know, go around telling people not to sing it as a way of promoting the fact that Warner have copyright on it, not because they don't want to get done, but they want people to know that Warner are misusing this alleged copyright.
So, hopefully this case will prove that they don't have copyright over it.
So every time they play Marilyn Monroe singing it, does somebody have to pay for it?
I guess
so, yeah.
And Neuro is listening live in the IRC channel, and he says that they have the copyright on the arrangement. So that would explain some of their copyright. But yes, it's one of those things where copyright has been extended and extended over the years. The Mickey Mouse syndrome, where every 20 years copyright gets extended by another 20 years so that Mickey and his friends never go out of copyright and Disney can keep on making money out of them.
Mm. Except in this case, 50 years ago, they failed to do that.
There we go.
Apparently.
Fascinating though, this is my favourite story of the week, as those of you who know me will understand. A company called Leadworks, the 3D game engine and visual editor, has launched a Kickstarter campaign to bring its software to Linux.
Is it software to do with photography and weddings?
No, it's something to do with games.
You do sound like an old man when you say games.
So at this point, I'm going to defer my better judgment to my friends Alan and Mark.
Hello.
Although I will just say that basically they're trying to make an IDE available to develop games on Linux, not just play them on Linux.
You sound about as comfortable with IDE as you did with games.
They have some software. What software? Someone asked me that in Spain a couple of weeks ago. What is software? I said, no, don't go down that road. So yes, they have a development tool which developers use to write games. And it has an editor and a modelling tool for creating the 3D models that go in your game. And it supports a couple of languages, Lua, which is very popular in gaming for scripting and stuff, and C++. And at the moment, they do all that on Windows, and I think OS X as well.
I think so, yes. And you can make games for mobile as well on it.
Right. And you can export your game out for a number of different platforms, mobile devices, or Windows or OS X.
Cool.
But their Kickstarter campaign is very... it's interesting, because they're not just saying, we want to port our tool across to Linux, please help pay for the development costs to do that. They're pitching it as this is, you know, in some ways the savior of gaming on Linux, and, you know, if we come to Linux, we'll bring these developers with us, and they can then work on Linux and export their games to Linux and run natively on the local machine, rather than developing on Windows and then copying across to a Linux machine and running it on the Linux machine, if that makes sense.
Yeah, which at the moment, if you want to do like a big 3D game, Unity
3D does the same thing. It runs on Windows and on the Mac, and you can spit out a Windows version or a Linux version. But
Their argument is all that's stopping people from developing games on Linux is the lack of a text editor.
That's yes, all games are made in text editors, Tony. Yeah. That's right.
Where I come from, text editor is a game.
Yeah.
Where I come from, where
multiplayer notepad.
So they did this Kickstarter campaign. It only started a couple of days ago. And how much are they asking for? Was it
something like
$20,000.
Okay.
And I think it's been like 48 hours or so far, and they're now up to $8,500.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting. The whole thing is branded as, you know, we're bringing it to Linux, bringing the tools to Linux, and, you know, and
they're talking about like expanding the portfolio and you know, promoting the development of Linux exclusive games as well.
Yes. It's an interesting pitch.
Yeah.
Rather than just saying, you know, you can use our tool to create games for Linux, which is what Unity 3D does.
Yeah.
They're saying you can actually come across to Linux and work on the machine.
And the other thing they're doing is Steam integration as well. So there's a thing on Steam called the Steam Workshop, and they're planning to integrate Leadworks with it so that you can take assets for your games. Like someone might have made a model of a car and you want that in your game, and they've shared it on Steam Workshop, so you'd be able to pull it into Leadworks and use it in your game.
Yeah.
And also they have a thing called Steam Greenlight, where people can submit their games and then the community vote on them, and the highest voted ones get sold through Steam, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have it so that Leadworks is integrated so you can push your game out to Steam for people to vote on.
So they've got a number of rewards, you know, T-shirts, the usual, the usual kind of stuff. But if you pay $100, you get... Oh, actually, there's one lower than that, isn't there? There's a $50 one that actually gets you the software. So it's non-free software.
Boo.
Yeah, that's a bad thing. It's $50 gets you the indie version, which lets you create games and script in this language called Lua.
Right.
And $100 gets you the version that lets you create games using C++ and Lua.
Right. Okay.
So 50 or 100 gets you the actual software, or any. And there are people who say, I'm not a game developer, but I've thrown some money your way anyway.
Cool.
Because I want to see the tool on Linux, and I want to see more games on Linux, which is cool.
Interesting.
Nathan Schneider has posted on the Huffington Post blog suggesting that a move to Linux may be the answer to freeing ourselves from companies complicit in mass government surveillance.
Ooh.
What companies would those be then?
I don't know, but this is always the answer, isn't it?
Yes.
When somebody does something bad in technology, maybe everyone will move to Linux.
Yeah.
But isn't Google on Linux?
Well,
well, even, I know even if they're maybe iffy.
You can be on Linux without giving all your data to Google.
Yeah.
But give it to Canonical instead.
And you can also be a company that runs all your infrastructure on Linux and give all your stuff to the NSA.
Yeah.
Yes. So... for those who perhaps haven't seen this in the press over the last couple of weeks, an organization or scheme called PRISM, run by the US government, has been unveiled, which shows that basically they have taps into Apple and Google and Facebook. And did they bother with Yahoo?
Yahoo say not.
And all the companies involved have denied that the NSA have these taps. The NSA seem pretty sure that they have these taps, and you'd hope
they think NSA know. Would not.
They were quite angry about it being revealed. Which,
it wasn't the NSA who revealed this. Yeah. It was
The Guardian.
Edward
Snowden.
Who was a sysadmin.
Yes, working in Hawaii for Booz Allen.
It's quite interesting seeing his interview, because he talks about how, you know, a lot of the agents or whatever they're called in the NSA, you know, they'll they'll know what they're working on, but they won't see what other people are working on, so they won't necessarily know the scale. Whereas the sysadmin, because he's administering the whole system, gets to see absolutely everything.
If you've got root at the NSA, you've got access to a lot of stuff.
Do you know the thing that this really made me think is, you know, when I've often thought, you know, for the companies that I work for, like, you know, Canonical at the moment, I trust the sysadmins. And, you know, we have a mail server and the mail goes through that mail server and, you know, my company emails in there. And I think, yeah, I trust those guys. And then I think, look at someone who's seen as a bit of a hero and is seemingly doing things for a good spirited reason. And I think, you know, any one of those guys in the office could be, you know, a well-meaning person and just, like, upload my mailbox to an FTP server somewhere or give it to The Guardian. I realise my email is nowhere near as
interesting. I was going to say, it depends what you've been doing.
As the NSA, but it did make me, you know, think twice about where I store stuff and kind of reevaluate.
You should use G-Man instead.
Yeah.
The difficulty is that for people who want to use open source software to get out of home to use these cloud services that we've been talking about for the last 5-10 years, is that it's still not as easy to set up a Google Drive equivalent on your own, your own hardware and then run it. I do wonder whether companies who actually have a bit more money to throw at these things will start to move their facilities back in-house, having spent a long time moving them out to the cloud.
It's time for that cycle. Well, it's not quite time for that cycle. It's almost time for that cycle to come round again. Yeah.
Private clouds.
Yeah.
Yeah, these things do sort of tend to come around every so often anyway, don't they?
And that's the end of the news.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that pleases, puzzles, or piques you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And remember, if we don't hear from you, we might not have enough content. And that can only mean one thing, more quizzes.
And now it's time for the community news, including events.
Snappy.
Stephen M. Webb has blogged about upcoming developments in Unity, including allowing Unity to run on the Mir display server with support for X11 applications and greatly expanded number of scopes for searching in the dash.
Stephen's awesome. He's got a team of guys who are working on, you know, getting Unity ready for release in 13.10, and they did the same thing for 13.04. So they're working really, really hard to get, you know, that robust and working nicely.
So the next the version of Unity going to be running in 13.10 is 7.1, is that right? And then Unity 8 is the one which is going to be running on Mir.
Yeah, so Unity 8 is the one that runs on the phone preview image right. that you see at the moment. And Unity 7 is the one that is in 13.04.
Yeah.
And the phone convergence of phone and desktop is aiming to come at 14.04.
Right.
So you've got version 7 in 13.04, 7.1 in 13.10, and then 8 in 14.04.
Right. So, and to enable that, they need all of the old X-type applications, which are the ones that you use on desktop at the moment, things like Firefox, OpenOffice, anything
Chromium
else,
and everything,
anything with a window. there needs to be a compatibility between that and the display server which the phone uses.
Yeah.
And I understand there is a driver being implemented that will allow applications that use the old windowing system called X to run on the new windowing system called Mir.
Yes. But there needs to be some work done because you then lose things like 3D acceleration because you're not using the 3D accelerator driver anymore.
Oh.
So, you know, there's work to be done.
Right.
But that's coming soon.
Yes,
and they've got time for that.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It's interesting to read. It's all. I mean, it's very open and honest about, you know, here's what we've been working on, and here's why it's broken at the moment, sort of thing.
Right. Okay. It's quite complicated, but I think the impact for users could be quite big, couldn't it?
Yeah, and with so the idea is that in 13.10 you'll have Unity 7.1, which won't look that different from Unity 7 that's in the current stable release.
Yeah,
of
polish and bug fixes, I think they're saying.
Polish and bug fixes, plus all the new scopes that didn't that were backed out at the last minute for 1304 are being...
So you can search eBay as well as Amazon.
And lots of other things as well. This 100 scopes thing, which is not 100, but it's, you know, it's some big number of scopes that are going into 1310, all of that stuff. Plus, there'll be a login that you can use to test out the new Mir stuff and the new Unity 8 style. And then it'll be default in 1404.
So each scope is a place you can search, whether it's applications or files or Amazon.
Well, think of it as like a data source. Yeah, a scope is a data source.
Right. So, for example, Amazon is one.
Yeah.
eBay could be one.
Yeah.
Your hard disk is one.
Flickr. Spotify or anything where there's basically anywhere where there's content that you might want to access.
Anywhere where there's a referral thing that the Canonical can know.
Yes, pay my wages, please.
One of the issues with the Amazon one when it first announced was that it wasn't encrypted, and it was people were curious about the anonymization. Mm-hmm. Is that the same for all these other ones? Do they all go through Canonical servers and get pushed out through them?
They all still go through Canonical servers, yeah.
And are encrypted?
As far as I understand it, yeah. I haven't looked at the new 100 scopes stuff.
But presumably they're open source, so if you're worried, Tony...
Yeah,
you can use your coding skills to delve into it and find out.
You do have a text editor, don't you? Yeah.
You're just being rude now.
Moving on. Jonathan Riddell has started a discussion on Ubuntu Devil mailing list about how non-Unity flavors, such as Kubuntu, will handle the move to Mir. So this is related to that previous
discussion. So there's a worry, basically, that because Mir is designed for Unity, that getting things like KDE or... XFCE to run on it, which are designed to run on X, isn't going to happen. So they'll need to do something like move to Wayland and rely on the upstream Debian packages, which probably aren't going to be looked at very much by Canonical, and hope that they continue working with everything else that's in the Ubuntu repositories.
It's a lengthy discussion, and it's still going on now. I pasted that link when it started a few days ago, and it's still going on now, and there's a bit of heated debate about with people having different perception of what needs to be done and who's responsible for doing the various bits and whether it will get done and whether it will continue to be maintained. And Jono's been wading in to the thread to try and mediate and get people talking to each other so they can kind of have a conversation about it and figure out a plan and a way forward. And there's been some Canonical people saying that they'll commit developer time to, you know, sort these problems out. It's a bit of a sticky situation for some of the flavors.
Yes.
It's a bit like Bridgestone tires and Ferrari many years ago.
Yes, it's exactly like that.
I think of all of the different flavors of Ubuntu, so the Lubuntu, Zubuntu, Ubuntu Studio, Mythbuntu, Kubuntu.
Edubuntu.
They're like the Jordan teams.
Right.
Okay.
What can my analogy?
All of those use environments that can't currently work with Mir.
No. Well, Mir isn't finished yet. Yeah. So I think there's been some assumption that it won't work and it can't work. And there's also been some discussion around the fact that, well, we've already decided, the upstreams have already decided, mostly KDE and GNOME, have already decided that they're going to go with Wayland. So therefore, in inverted commas, the free software community has decided to go with Wayland. So why should we waste our time working on getting Mir support as well when we've already got the commitment to go in this direction?
Yeah.
And so there's a bit of frustration there because people feel that they're going to have to do like duplicate amount of work and to support multiple display servers.
What's the benefit of Mir?
Oh, crikey. That's not a question I can answer in 30 seconds.
It's, okay. So we've got 5 minutes.
Gosh, so
the timer ticks down. Alan drums his fingers on the arm of the chair.
Yeah.
Going,
We should get someone on to talk about
that. We should.
Yes.
Somebody who knows what we're talking about.
Yeah, we could get Thomas on and talk about Mir.
Yeah. There's a new advantage to being an Ubuntu member, as if there weren't enough. This one is that you can get a certificate signed by Mark Shuttleworth.
A digital certificate. Printed.
And a printed certificate, apparently on good quality paper stock.
Oh. Are you going to get one? Sorry.
I was hoping it was going to be an SSL certificate for my website.
Oh, no.
I see what you did there.
signed by Mark Shuttleworth.
Signed with Mark Shuttleworth's own personal key.
Yeah, this has got a cool thing, I think.
Is it? It really? Is. Do you think that? I think that's sarcasm.
No, I can't work out whether it's brilliant and I want one, or it's a bit meh.
So if you're already an Ubuntu member, is he going to send them out to everyone? Yes. Or do you have,
you have to request it, but yes, they will.
Have you requested yours, Tony?
No, not yet, but I might do it during the...
Judging by the grin on your face, during the break between the episodes.
Yeah. What are you going to do with it?
Put it
on his wall next to a signed picture of Matt Smith.
Yeah. I thought you could say my signed picture of Mark Shuttleworth.
hasn't got one of those.
The Ubuntu members team on Launchpad, which I think one way they gauge how many, you know, who's going to be eligible to have one of these prized possessions.
Are you looking forward to yours then?
They'll be showing up on Antiques Roadshow in 100 years or so.
Wrapped around a vase.
Seven hundred and seventy odd members.
Yeah, Jono's going to be busy faking the signature on 700 of those, isn't he?
John Mark's going to get a rubber stamp.
He'll cut it into a potato.
Yes, totally.
Get Ack on it.
Actually, at Lug Radio Live, didn't Ack actually potato stamp Mark's hand?
Mm.
Yes.
I like the idea that he didn't know who he was, but I'm not sure whether that's true.
Right.
At the first
one, know who Mark was.
The first Lug Radio Live in 2005.
Didn't know who Ack was. How could he possibly not know?
As fascinating as I'm sure this discussion is for our listeners about people we know, what else is in the community news?
Laura, is there something else on Jono's blog?
Something about an Ubuntu app developer cookbook featuring commonly asked questions about Ubuntu app development, along with their answers and code examples.
I actually thought this was going to be like one of those O'Reilly cookbooks.
No,
is
it's on
O'Reilly
a website.
Who do them?
Yes.
Yes. But no, this is a like a
they just pinched the idea.
Frequently asked questions on Ubuntu app development.
This is Jono saying there's going to be some documentation, basically.
Oh, for app developers.
Yeah.
So there isn't any in the commonly asked questions, the answers to them, and code snippets.
Yes, exactly.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
Bright.
How do I read stuff from the camera?
Exactly.
Here's how. Copy paste. Yes.
Exactly.
Good. That's developer.ubuntu.com.
Yes.
Ubuntu Touch is now based on Saucy Salamander, although there's still some compatibility and stability work to be done to bring it up to scratch with the Raring-based images.
Yes. I have in my hand a phone running Saucy Salamander.
I understand it doesn't yet work on the Nexus 7.
Yes, it does.
Ooh.
I have one of those in my bag over there, yes. It does work. They're both a little bit glitchy. We've got some cool apps on here. This one is my favourite app.
It's the cow box.
It's an app that plays animal sounds.
Brilliant. Yes, it does.
It's cool.
Excellent.
Do you know what we don't have? We don't have a fart app, you see? That's why this cookbook needs to be made, so that people know how to make apps like that.
Like soundboards of Jono Bacon.
Exactly.
I noticed it plays sound. It didn't used to do that.
Well, get us. See?
There you go, see?
With this sheep noise, we will take over the world.
It sounds like there's some developers
working on this. Sound doesn't work on the Nexus 7 at the moment. That's broken.
Well, that's shocking.
Yes.
There we go.
Do we have some events?
We do, yes. There's a Hack and Talk on the 29th of June in London.
Oh, this is Laura Tchaikovsky's.
Yes.
She mentioned it last
couple
time.
Of episodes.
Yes, I heard. I was listening.
On your boat.
Yes. There's also Flossie holding an OpenStreetMap mapping picnic in Tower Hamlets Cemetery Park. Do you need a lot of mapping in Cemetery Park?
There's a lot of paths to cemeteries.
Cool. Yeah, you only need to do it once.
That's July the 20th. We'll put a link in the show notes. And there's also an OpenStreetMap. Oh my gosh, I can't talk.
Street Map Conference?
Yeah, that's the one. 6th to the 8th of September this year at Aston University Business School Conference Centre, Golly, in Birmingham.
Been there, nice place.
And I don't know what that's all about, but
it's their annual OpenStreetMap Conference, State of the Map, and it's been held all around the world. And it's coming back to the UK for the first time in about 6 or 7 years.
Oh, cool.
So that's quite cool.
Excellent.
Software Freedom Day is on Saturday, the 21st of September. The registration deadline for teams to get free goodies is the 21st of July.
So you've got a month for that.
Yes. So that's softwarefreedomday.org. And what else?
There are no other events.
Oh, camp.
Except that one.
That is an event.
Yes, that is happening at LJMU in Liverpool on the 19th and 20th of October.
Yes.
And we will be telling you more about it in the coming weeks.
Indeed. Watch this space.
And the website.
That's all for this episode. Join us next time when we'll be interviewing Linda Sandvik from Co Club, reading your feedback and making your life a little bit easier with some question marks.
That is supposed to say love. It's a gooey love next time, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and I think it's a really good one because I chose it.
Good.
Excellent.
Yes. So, thank you very much indeed for listening and join us next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.